Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Intermission.
This episode has actual professionals on it, apparently.
Yeah, we've got Kaiser with us, of all people. Kaiser, the person behind so much in the community. He's been in charge of Doom 64, porting it twice. He's been in charge of reviving several old retro FPSs and bringing them into the modern day. And he has no intentions of stopping. So, Kaiser, hi. Nice to have you with us. How have you been doing?
Doing pretty good. Just staying busy and whatnot. So yeah, that's that's pretty much all there is to say about that.
Good to hear. Now, that's all the guests that matter, so let's just jump right on.
Ah, oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah, we also have Edward. Edward 850.
Oh, hello there, Terminus.
Hi, how the fuck have you been, mate?
I've been busy, I guess.
Yeah, I hear you're actually doing stuff on a professional level now.
Oh, but I guess it's professional. I had to write an entire netcode in a year. That was fun.
Seems like just yesterday we were shitting all over ZDoom's netplay, and now here you are, writing netplay professionally. That's incredible,
dude. It was yesterday.
So, good to have both of y'all here with us. This is going to be a very, very interesting night to remember. So let's pick apart your brains and see how much y'all are willing to talk shit about something that's completely unrelated to your projects.
Okay.
All right. First up, let's jump straight into the news. And we're starting off on a high note. Ladies and gentlemen, it is released. Wolfenstein's Legacy is secured. We have been waiting, and the hype machine has been rolling for well over a year now. The forums have been afire, the doors are open, and now it's finally here. Rise of the Wolball, sequel to Shadow of the Wolball, has arrived.
but it's good.
Yep. It is really, really interesting. The first release, Shadow of the Wolball, released last year, mentioned in the CAC Awards, and it just seems like a complete recipe for disaster. I mean, someone who has never made a big project before, flying entirely by the seat of his pants on stuff to include, and has been working on it for year after year after year, just including everything that strikes their fancy, it just sounds like a recipe for development hell.
That was a big Wolfenstein reference, and that usually doesn't add much confidence.
Yeah. Turns out when you make a whole bunch of projects entirely about referencing an older thing, it kind of gets weird.
Hmm. But Shadow of the Wolball was really good. Just this fun, lighthearted, Wolfenstein-y game about endless cat murder. And Rise of the Wolball really goes in the same sort of vein, except instead of being Wolfenstein-y, it's Rise of the Triad-y? I'm not really sure how to do that sentence.
Well, to be honest, I kind of liked Rise of the Triad, so I'm fine with this.
Yeah, it's turned out pretty well.
I like Rise of the Triad.
So I haven't actually played like any mods lately. Is this a EC Wolf mod or a Doom mod?
It is a Z-Doom. Yeah, it is Z-Doom mod, and specifically Z-Doom. It shuns the newest builds of GZ-Doom in order to make use of an older build of Z-Doom, which is something that has earned a bit of ire from the developers of GZ-Doom.
Seems like it's something that can be fixed super easily, though, so that'll probably be fixed on one side or the other really quickly.
And then from there, there's also another Wolfenstein-style project that was released. Something? Dagger of Mild Discomfort?
That's what I was laughing about, because I thought that that's what you're going to mention at first. And I'm like, oh, right, of course. That other wolf mod that got released.
Yeah. Okay, basically, there's two releases, and one is truly a successor to Wolfenstein's design legacy, and the other is Blade of Agony.
Oh god, it's Battlefield 1 and Titanfall 2 all over again!
Okay, but yeah, Wolfenstein Blade of Agony Chapter 2 has been released, and there was a little bit of period where Torm and company, they were having a lot of trouble kind of wrangling the engine into place, but, I mean, it's here now. It's wonderful. Well, supposedly it's wonderful. I have not actually played it yet. It was released this morning?
It was released a couple of days ago.
Hmm. Shows how much attention we've been paying to that project after playing the first episode.
I have not been following it at all, and I kind of feel bad for it because I want to give it a second chance.
It feels like there are high-resolution sprites in it now, but they look fog as fuck, so... I don't know.
Didn't John Romero tweet about it? Or?
Oh, yeah. John Romero himself said it is probably one of the most impressive projects he has ever seen for a Doom mod. And, I mean, I guess I can understand that. It is very visually impressive.
Yeah, and then you play it, but just looking at it, it is visually very impressive. To the point where it could probably be done better and more efficiently on an actual game engine now, instead of viciously fighting the Doom engine. But I suppose that's part of the thrill, isn't it?
I'm sure y'all have incredible memories of wrestling with Jeezy Doom and getting it to do some stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Still bearing the scars.
Oh, yeah.
See, I never made mods like that. I just focused on... Jeez, what did I make?
I'm just remembering playing Community Has Fallen 3 and looking at... how it did stuff, and like how many wheels it was reinventing purely on account of all the engine features that were being added while it was being made that had since been added officially or something.
The entire dynamic string system.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I was implementing that actually was not in, but it would have made a lot of sense that these features would have been implemented in the first place, and I just found it crazy to see that once it was, once it was actually released, I learned that, you know, all these features in the next version of Zeegan was implemented that could have, in which the mod could have benefited from. And I just, you know, I was kind of bummed out about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's understandable.
Didn't you have like a custom ACC compiler for that?
No, but I did write like helper tools to generate stuff.
Ah, robot programmers. Nothing can go wrong with that.
Hmm. Magnificent.
CI4 is actually Skynet.
I have not verified this, but I have been told that Community of Fallen 3 is actually not runnable on modern builds of Jeezy Doom now.
It was for one build, at least, because GraphCell changed how all the thing numbers were assigned. Because for some odd reason, CIA3 uses negative thing numbers.
Ooh.
That made Graph really angry.
It was just encouraging the float numbers, that's it. It was turning them into float numbers.
Float editor numbers. I'll just add thing number 3000.63.
Alright, and then from there, let's move on to something not Doom-related. The vinyl release of Quake 1 soundtrack has been announced, and it is on the store of Nine Inch Nails right now with a label called Coming Soon on it.
It's interesting because the Quake soundtrack, for something that was supposedly hacked together pretty quickly, there's been a lot of weird stuff about it with the recent digital re-releases of the game. Like, the Steam version doesn't have the soundtrack, the GOG version used to have it, but they had to do some fiddling around and just ship a disc image of the original disc image of the game instead due to licensing stuff. So it's interesting to see some actual movement on this sort of stuff.
Trent Reznor, he's got a real love for vinyl. I am not at all familiar with the advantages, but I mean, I'm also the kind of guy that uses cheap headphones brought from Walmart. I rip MP3s from videos on YouTube, and FLAC sounds to me like the duck just got strangled halfway through. But It is a very cool collectible item, and even for non-collectors, it'll be fantastic for audiophiles. I'm told the audio quality is comparable to FLAC, which is interesting, if I knew what that meant.
I'm not a vinyl expert myself, but I believe the correct term for that listening experience isn't so much high quality as it is comfy.
Can't argue with comfy.
If that makes sense.
I don't have a record player anymore. I used to have one.
Yes.
It just kind of disappeared over time.
Are record players, like, still being sold? Actually, I probably shouldn't ask that.
Vinyl's made a pretty big comeback in retail lately.
Mm.
Sort of replacing the format that replaced it, CDs, in as like the I'm actually buying physical music thing.
What next? Will cassette tapes make a playback too?
Do you want the answer to that question?
I'm not going to lie. The best thing about cassette tapes was like sticking a pencil in and just kind of revving it all up. That was really fun.
That doesn't really sound fun.
Term was a simple child.
I was a very simple child. I'm a simple adult, too, so, you know, that kind of balances things out.
But at least now you know what glue tastes like, and not to make that mistake again.
Did you know that there's a difference between contact cement and Elmer's?
We've got a fucking aficionado here.
The aficionado of cement?
Alright, in our final slice of news, we've got another mod released by the name of something called like a Space Hunter or something. It was made by
I haven't really paid much attention to it. Creator sounds like kind of a nerd, so.
Yeah, and Space Hunter means song. Wow, Keegan, way the fuck to rip off Metroid Dreadnought. You've even got the same beam swapping mechanic and bomb throwing and everything. And you just slip this out under my nose when I'm not looking after all I've done for you? Unbelievable. You think I wouldn't notice, you little bitch? Think again. As we speak, I'm contacting my secret network as Chozo's across the galaxy, and my planet is being traced right now, so you better prepare.
We need a net here!
No, but seriously, it's a Space Hunter. It's pretty rad. One thing that Keegan tells me that I tried to focus on with this release is making things simple. And it shows. I mean, you've got your beams, your missiles, your bombs, and that's pretty much all you need.
You eat glue for health. The armor bonus is the paint chips.
The bomb is really fun. I had a lot of fun throwing bombs around and making things blow up. That was nice. So if any of you've got the opportunity, definitely check it out. It's another great Keegan mod. Keegan makes good stuff. If we go any further, we'll probably just be sucking them off the entire time, so let's just leave it at that. And from there, let's jump straight into probably the most exciting part of this for me. What have you been making recently? And, oh, I am excited. Kaiser, I hear you've been doing some really, really cool stuff recently. You mind if I just kind of pick your brain apart and see everything that's inside?
No, he needs his brains.
No, not for long. I mean, I'll give them back.
Okay, sounds better. I guess one of the things to mention is, you know, of course, Turok.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, the first Turok EX originally started back in 2011. I was actually just bored one day, and I was just wondering how how Turok worked, like what were the contents that made up its levels, and you know how did they render the environments, and how did their AI work and stuff like that, and I started taking apart and just trying to figure out the data formats and how they were structured and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember spending a good amount of time trying to figure out how their animations worked.
Really?
Yeah. They used some crazy compression techniques to squeeze all that information onto a 8 meg cart. And I think the actual game data is like 7.99 megs. So they really crammed a lot.
Is there like any sort of major interpolation or that sort of stuff going on, or is it just?
Yeah, there is a ton of interpolation. They strangely enough, their animation system is pretty complicated. For an N64 game, it's actually pretty impressive.
That is impressive.
Wasn't Turok one of the first games to really push motion captured animations?
Yes.
I think Acclaim, like, there was a... I remember reading about a motion capture animation format created by Acclaim that sort of got put out into the wider world. So I guess it makes sense that they know a bunch about that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had like an in-house format for their motion capture stuff. But for the actual game animation data, it was pretty impressive. But a lot of the complexity in their animations actually goes to the into the blending and interpolations on between frames.
And that's really interesting. When you look at another shooter on the N64, Quake 2, it actually had to do away with interpolation because it just took up way too much space. So the big question is, how was Turok able to get away with it, but Quake couldn't?
Well, as far as I understand, I'm not actually too familiar on how different Quake 2's model format is from Quake 1, but I know that for each animation, it's basically a copy of the model in different frame poses, and Quake blends those frames together. While in Turok, it uses a joint based system where it only animates the joints, and then all the model pieces would just move with those.
Wait, hold on, joints? Like, does the gun have a skeleton?
Yes, it's, well...
Jesus Christ, we're shutting this down right now.
It's kind of hard to explain. It's... Wow.
The skeletons are everywhere!
Everywhere.
But yeah, it was all node-based, so in Turok 1, the models we made up of several pieces, but it still followed a hierarchy of different nodes that made those model pieces animate.
Mm-hmm.
While in Turok 2, it had a more actual, like, a skin-based animation.
Yeah, I remember when Turok, back in that era of N64 games, when Turok 2 was coming out, magazines were going crazy about soft skinning. Like, actually using one texture for the entire model or whatever, like,
yeah.
You could expect in the actual 3D games that were on PC at the time.
Yeah. It was, I mean, their animation in Turok 2 was actually not too different from Turok 1. It's just the only difference was in Turok 1, they used multiple models to represent, you know, the different articulation when they're animating, while in Turok 2, they just assign which vertice of that model that should animate with each node. But regardless, I mean, still, for an N64 game, it was actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Mm.
So one thing that interests me about the Turok 1 release is that this Turok EX project of yours, I believe it started as a hobby project?
Yes.
And then it became an officially licensed commercial re-release on a PC, and I think Xbox in the future.
Yep.
How does that sort of work out? Like, did Night Dive come knocking on your door one day? Like, okay, so look, we have this license.
Yeah. After I was wrapping up Strife Veteran Edition, Night Dive found out that I was working on this Turok EX project, and they were actually pretty excited, because even though they got a contract with the IP owners to do, like, a remaster, they didn't have any actual resource, and I was the one that figured out all the data formats, and I was able to convert that data to a much more readable format. So I was able to preserve the assets, and we were able to recreate the game using those original assets.
Hmm. That's impressive. So it's sort of a matter like, they have the license, you have the data, they also conveniently have bags of dollar signs.
Yeah, pretty much.
Kind of. There's a lot of legalese going on in the background.
Yeah, I think like we spent like 10 minutes or something at the start of this podcast before we hit record about all the stuff we couldn't talk about.
Oh, it gets much deeper than that. That's just us. All the stuff that Stephen and Larry have to deal with is just insane. They have stories that I don't think they could ever tell another living soul.
And then from there, we've just got two men in suits. They're sitting in a dark room. They put out their cigarette on the table. Look, Larry, no matter how much anyone digs, we cannot let anyone know that we've killed off Redneck Rampage for good.
So after completing Turok, you guys went on to do Turok 2. As I understand it, the engine in that is really different from the first game, right?
Not too much. Surprisingly, like a few months right after I was done with Turok 1, we finally got a hold of the original source code, and I was like, okay, time to redo a whole bunch of stuff. In addition to that, I also got a hold of the source code for Turok 2, and it's actually not too different from Turok 1. The only major things that they completely redid was the AI and how animations were managed, but it was more or less very similar to the structure of Turok 1.
With an extra method or two, with something along the lines of make levels more confusing.
Yeah. I still think Turok 1 is a much enjoyable game because, yeah, Turok 2 was just an absolute mess in terms of game design. I am not a huge fan of the levels, and I tried with the time left that I had, I tried to fix up the levels so they wouldn't be less mazy. I guess, and try to not make it too confusing.
And people inevitably complained about it.
Yeah, we got complaints because we made some of the levels linear.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a catch-22 situation, unfortunately. If you just leave the levels as they are, then the problems with the original levels are going to shine through all the harder. But if you edit all the levels, then it's not really that authentic a port. So it's kind of...
Yeah.
One of those damned if you do, damned if you don't things. Because there's always going to be that crowd that's going to be like, it needs the original fog!
I think we implemented better fog in the end.
Yeah.
There was one level that was like a graveyard, and it was supposed to have fog across the floor. And that ended up vanishing somehow during the transition.
Well, in the original game, they actually used the sky to act as the fog. And the way I did the renderer was the sky was no longer like part of the world. It was more treated like a skybox. So that meant that if the sky was lowered, you wouldn't see it because the level would be drawn on top of it. So that's why initially no one ever saw the fog. So I had to go in and create custom particles to spawn the fog. And it actually ended up a lot better because I used the depth buffer to make the fog fade out near geometry, so it looked like actual fog rather than just a thin plane covering the entire level.
Taking tricks from Superman 64, I see.
Using the background cloud layer as a floor fog, that's one of those 2 hours before sending the cartridge to Nintendo innovations.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of weird things that cause... Kazer was talking about editing the levels before, and the thing is that no matter what happened with Turok 2, the levels had to be edited. Somehow, they didn't work properly when trying to make them run, even though we pretty much pulled them from the original source. We didn't have the original source assets, but pulling them from the distributed games, they didn't work properly for some reason because they made too many precise assumptions about their running environment. So they had to be edited anyway. There was no way around it.
Yeah, a lot of the content in Turok 2 relied on quirkiness in the N64 hardware to make things work. And when you try to replicate that that code on a modern PC, it doesn't provide the exact same behavior. So even when I had the source code, I still had to make assumptions and do some alterations to make it behave like how it should. And it was actually a huge mess.
One of those situations where you just have to kind of play it by ear, but hopefully you get it right.
Yes. Yeah.
How the original PC version ever worked is just even more bewildering because of it.
they actually screwed up the original PC version. They actually left out like two enemies, and they screwed up like several textures and particles.
Wow.
Oh, the plasma rifle.
Yes, they screwed that up. They left out like one of the zombies were supposed to have like a half torso zombie that comes crawling after you. They left that enemy out, and there was a lot of textures that had the incorrect UV mappings and stuff like that, and they just completely messed all that up. So I actually had to borrow some of the assets from the original 64 ROM and try to patch up, you know, all the stuff that they messed up on. And the sounds. And all the sounds from the original PC version were utter crap. I actually ended up extracting all of the audio from the N64, and it was like twice the quality.
Really?
Which is weird when you consider like the file size restrictions on N64 cartridges.
Yeah, it seems like the PC version is the one where you just completely bloat the file size.
That's sort of the reason, because everything comes from a cart on the N64, they can almost pretty much stream the audio straight off the cart. So they can afford high quality resources.
Instead, they took the audio and they compressed it and reduced the sample rate. So everything sounds like very muffled out. Why they decided to do that, I don't know.
They probably put less resources into the original PC release, the acclaimed felt one, than you'd probably assume. Because I don't remember really seeing much of anything of that release back in the day. Like, I saw like one ad for it once, compared to the advertising onslaught that the N64 version went through.
Yeah, it was obvious that the port was very half-assed.
Iguana were kind of a weird developer, going back to that game design differences between Turok 1 and 2 thing. It really felt like that they had the whole eyes bigger than their belly thing going on, and were sort of trying to push the N64 as hard as they could, then figure out a way to justify it with the game mechanics later.
Yeah, they seemed more focused on content rather than quality, and that's pretty much the major flaw in Turok 2.
Like, I remember reading a preview of Turok 3 in a magazine back in the day, and it made a big deal about how the preview version of the game, which was uncompressed, was stretched across like 4 or 5 N64 cartridges. Using like a game copier or something.
Man, how do you even play that?
It was game development, man.
Game dev is hard. Like, really, really hard.
Yeah, so what cartridge is level 4 on? Oh, it's on cartridge 8.
All right, and now, finally, the big burning question that everyone is just aching to know about. It's absolutely aching. When are you guys taking Turok 2008 EX?
Not gonna happen.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Are we allowed to say that just in case it does?
That's not it. It shouldn't even be called Turok.
That thing was just an abomination unto God and man.
Speaking of abominations of God and man, Turok Evolution.
I have heard very little about that game. I'm not even sure what it is.
It was Iguana's attempt to move on to the PS2 and GameCube. There were like flying levels it didn't work enormously well.
Huh.
Yeah, I've actually seen some videos of it. I mean, it looks impressive, but it didn't look like it was fun.
I think we can all agree that probably the best Turok is the Turok anime.
Wait, what?
Because that was good. That was incredible.
Oh, the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually pretty good, all things considered.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, it's one of those things where you'd expect it to be a shitty cash-in, but no, it is probably the best video game movie. Which is weird, because it's actually based on the comic book, but...
Well, yeah, so that would make it a comic book movie.
Shut up, I count it as a video game.
Let him hold on to this.
Yeah, I definitely need to look that up. I never heard of it.
All right, Turok: Son of Stone. I think the full thing is on YouTube, actually. It is incredible.
Yeah, I couldn't find a DVD of it anywhere anymore. I don't think anybody's actually publishing it. I'm not sure who would have the publishing rights for it.
How about you, Edward? You've been also involved in Turok stuff, I hear. I hear there's some upcoming patches.
The same Turok stuff, essentially. So I'm still kind of working on the Turok 2 multiplayer. That's been an interesting ride, because that was less of a porting job and more of... So I have these two completely different versions of multiplayer, and I need something that represents them both in this new version, because neither of them are directly portable.
Yeah, they both use GameSpy.
No. Nintendo 64 version of Turok 2 is just Nintendo 64. How does that work, GameSpy, Kaiser?
it used like GameSpy and R-Time or something like that.
That was the PC version, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
You see both versions.
It's really kind of depressing, like installing some old PC games, and then it's asking for like your GameSpy account. I tried reinstalling Painkiller the other day, and it asked for my GameSpy account so I could log into the servers and play with other people, and it was just, oh man.
Yeah, so basically my job became sort of creating a new multiplayer based off all of the available assets, and that also included creating multiplayer in Kex Free, because we didn't have that before. It never needed it before. So it was creating multiplayer, creating all the netcode for that, and somehow getting split screen implemented in like 3 months as well, just on a whim. I don't know why we did that.
In 3 months?
Yeah, no, what happened was I woke up one morning and I was just like, this is so stupid. Why do all these new games keep getting released with no split screen? Screw this, I'm adding split screen. And it just kind of happened. Like 3 months before the development was finished. I'm surprised it worked as well as it did.
Kaiser was probably surprised as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, Edward convinced me to implement split screen.
Oh, he did the renderer. I did all the logic stuff for it.
Mm. I'm just imagining Kaiser waking up one day, walking over to his computer, and being like, "He did what to my renderer?"
It was kind of like that at one point, because I had to change a whole bunch of code to allow for the concept of multiple local players. And Kaiser was like, okay, can you... That's nice, but can you never do that again?
Could you please not?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
For now, it's been a case of continuing to patch and update it, and we have a couple of things to sort of... There's at least one more patch at the moment that we're sort of holding back on for now, while we do other stuff that'll have like a couple of features in it. Nothing.
Actually, this next patch is going to have a lot of fixes. There was a lot of rendering optimizations that I've been doing.
Oh, yes, those.
Yeah, the stuff that I've been doing for the console port, that's going to be going in for into the patch as well.
I'm trying to think about what I can mention based off when this podcast episode will end up being released in public.
Just say you're fixing all the holes that the dodgeball mod brought up.
You're aware of the dodgeball mod?
We're also aware of Brutal Turok.
It's great.
We haven't actually seen much of Brutal Turok, but the dodgeball mod, the developer of that, has actually been messaging me, and he's surprisingly been helpful in isolating a few weird issues that kind of got left over during development.
So this is what happens when you try and sync 50,000 particles over the network.
It was surprisingly resilient to that. There is a limit, of course, because eventually there's just not enough room to fist all that data over someone's pipe. That's an interesting choice of words.
Look, I'm just pushing as hard as I can, but Oni-chan, my hips are moving on their own.
But I send packets from there.
Not anymore, you don't.
But I managed to. Over the past few weeks, I've been cleaning a lot of that up, and it's been. There's been very little issues about it, other than one that weirdly keeps cropping up for exactly one person when he connects to exactly this one other person. That's strange. That's sort of what you had to put up with. But a lot of that it's actually gone above expectations, considering I pretty much had to make the entire net code in a year. That's been interesting. Fortunately, I can basically just keep using the netcode, so other Kex projects, in fact, that was basically the idea from the start, is that other Kex projects will use the same netcode, and we can just kind of forward and backwards port things all over the place when necessary. Sort of kind of like a source engine approach.
Well, I mean, given your track record with the Jeezy Doom netcode, can we really look forward to it?
Well, I mean, here for a start, I've kind of disowned Jeezy Doom.
Yeah.
I mean, I was basically kind of up against a wall on that one because I was always tied to exactly how Doom worked, but incidentally not how Doom worked.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of this weird enigma.
And everything had to go through Graph, and everything Graph did had to go through Randy, and Randy was kind of not there half the time, so
I can't explain it. It's like everything about Jeezy Doom has to change except for this one very particular thing where everything's deterministic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, so how do you write a net code for that when everybody else can write literally whatever mod they want? It's kind of uncontrollable, that scenario.
Wow, really? I mean, it's like whenever they make an update, I mean, you have to like rewrite like a large portion or something?
No, you don't have to rewrite it. The problem is that anybody can make a mod that does whatever it wants, and that introduces a bit of a problem where if you want to write a deterministic netcode, how do you add protection against that when somebody can write a mod that checks what your screen resolution is?
Oh yeah, that's actually, wow.
There's actually like protections against that sort of stuff in the recent ZScript stuff. They're sort of trying to, like, menus can't directly affect gameplay. They have to sort of go through a certain way because their menus obviously aren't networked.
Still a whole bunch of fun if you have a map with a get cvar that's checking to see if a player is in software or hardware renderer, because software and hardware players can connect with each other now. So if you have something that's dependent entirely on software renderer and it spawns for the hardware player but doesn't spawn for the software player, then...
Oh no. There was actually an old bug, I think it was in ZPack, where it spawned something to do with the skybox based off the renderer that you're using. And everybody was sitting there wondering why the skybox was breaking in certain renderers for like months on end. And it was like, oh, what's the script doing that's spawning the skybox viewpoint?
Yeah.
But I mean, since then, I mean, because it's that because of the way the direction Zedum's going, I've actually been focusing on Eternity and implementing Kex's style of netcode into Eternity and seeing how that works.
Yeah, and I hear you've been doing a split screen with that too, huh?
There's a build for that at the moment. But that's kind of stalled because the next step to do with that is sort of rewrite a particularly significant portion of the renderer to make it cleaner and allow for screen wiping to work. And there hasn't been a lot of time for that just yet.
Hmm.
If it was hardware, it would have been done overnight.
actually, probably, yeah. Except then I'd have to learn how to do hardware rendering.
Oh, it's easy. You can probably learn it in 2 days.
I probably could, but then I'd have to push something out of my mind. I'll probably forget how to breathe for like 2 days.
What's this mushy stuff on this plate? What is this food you talk about?
And then from there, how about you, Kinsey? What have you been working on?
I've been sort of burrowing away in my dumb Zedum mod laboratory, messing around with some stuff that may or may not get released at some point. I don't really want to talk about it too much myself because I'm sort of superstitious in that if I talk about stuff too early, I'll eventually get distracted and never work on it again. But I've also been talking with Dr. PySpy, who's been messing around with my other mod, MetaDoom.
PySpy? That's a username.
And they've been messing around with some interesting ZScript stuff, like there's now like a codex system, sort of like Doom 4's, where you can read some random lore about monsters and see how many of them you've killed in that playthrough. Pretty cool stuff.
How in the hell did you get a codex working?
I didn't.
How in the hell did he get a codex working?
I don't know. Black magic or something? All of his coding stuff is completely beyond me, and I'm completely comfortable with that. I only know enough to be dangerous.
There's the two states of any programmer. One, I am a god. Two, I am a dog.
What?
What?
Yeah.
You've never seen that picture of that dog sitting in front of the computer going, I have no idea what I'm doing?
Probably. All those sorts of images kind of become a blur. We see so many programmer-related jokes. It's just, they're all one huge contention.
Yeah, Kenzie here going, have you seen that picture of the dog on the internet?
All the memes I see make nowadays are based on opossums.
Actually, possums are pretty popular now, aren't they?
Term, I'm sorry I have to break it to you like this, but American possums are fucked up and creepy. They're super rats.
No, they're not. They're awesome.
I swear to God, if you make an awesome possum joke, I will...
Maybe it's just because I come from a country where possums like cute, as opposed to horrifying rabies monsters.
Kinsey, you have spiders.
Yeah, and from the sounds of things, the possums fight them in my roof every night. Seriously, it's like fucking Lord of the Rings up there. Like, I'll just be sitting here in my room, and I'll just start hearing in the background... just these horrifying noises from out the window, and I'm just like, possums.
Yeah, so you have possums, and all we have is more porks.
And sheep.
We don't have a lot of sheep in the cities.
Give it time.
Yeah, suppose it's only a matter of time. They will outnumber us all.
For me, I've been playing around with the ZScript as well. The ZScripting of On Cosmic Tides is almost finished, and I must admit I'm having a certain amount of fun with the thing. I've had fun from the beginning wrestling with this damn new coding system, because I've mentioned before, it's a lot like an adventure game where you sort of have to pick and choose different solutions and follow some crazy developer moon logic. It's like that, but with programming.
I don't like that idea as programming. That sounds horrifying.
Right, it's beautiful. If you have no clue what you're doing, then that makes it great. And I still don't understand a single damn thing about it, but there's kind of a certain amount of fun to be had in taking really complicated processes that would require 8 different states in Decorate and simplifying them down to just a couple functions. It's really, really satisfying to take this big, massive jumble of wires and just with one fell swoop, it's all streamlined and clean. It is the most satisfying shit.
Sounds painful in the process, though, but...
Sounds incredibly unintuitive.
Not gonna lie.
Does anybody even understand how ZScript works?
No, not at all. Well, I mean, that's not entirely true. Graphzol understands. Major Cook understands.
But they don't want to tell anyone else.
Well, I mean, they sort of do, and they claim that there's been documentation, and this documentation has... Vacreus once wrote a guide on ZScript on the Xenum forums, a new Decorate's user guide into getting into ZScript, and it was really interesting because I was following every single step. I was reading the entire thing. I understand. Okay, so this is like this. This is like this. Okay, I put this here. I put that there. And then I get to the very end of the guide. Congratulations, you're done. You've created something in ZScript. And I look at my ZScript and I'm like, cool. I don't understand a single fucking thing.
These are words.
Some of them have letters.
This is kind of surprising when I hear about ZScript because it... Oh, did it come out before or after Turok 2? I don't entirely remember. But with Turok 2, we have a thing called AngelScript.
Oh, yeah.
And what I noticed was that the moment we released Turok 2, within a week, a whole bunch of people on this Turok forum had all the functions pulled from somewhere. I don't know where they got them from. Obviously somehow you can export them from the executable in some way.
I think so. I think that's possible.
Yeah, they must have, because they had functions that I ended up not even using. And they figured out all on their own. Nobody asks us questions about how to do X inside of AngelScript. They just seem to understand. It writes itself.
Well, also, AngelScript is pretty heavily documented.
Yeah, oh, I'd imagine that because it's an existing language, it's got an advantage there.
But what I mean is, like, in the context of, like, how to do things in Turok, because obviously Turok has its own functions. And it feels like the complete opposite to what's been going on with Zdoom and ZScript.
ZScript's in a weird place with it basically being more or less salvaged from Randy's VM experiments. And like, it's fun to play around with and make stuff with, but it's also pretty frustrating in many ways. But I suppose this is what we have. And the rest of that engine is pretty attuned to my particular brand of mental illness, so I'm sure I'll get used to this.
And then from there, we have to look forward to Unity.
C-sharp.
If I was given a choice between Unreal and Unity, I choose Unreal. Because Unity...
I've already did that.
Well, I'm just saying, Unity, I mean, it has some pretty cool features, but the great thing about Unreal is that you have access to the source code, so you can pretty much do whatever you want with it.
Yeah. The great thing about Unity is... So how about that Unreal, huh?
The general idea that I've gotten from a completely uneducated watching from the sidelines point of view is that if you want to make mobile games, you use Unity. If you want to make console and big PC games, you use Unreal. And if you want to make a moddable game, you cry in despair.
You can create a moddable game with Unreal, but the problem is that you kind of have to create how it's modded yourself. You know, that goes back to the whole point of you have the source code, you can change various things and change where all the data is retrieved from,
But considering how that engine started with UT99, it just feels like I have opinions about this stuff.
Yeah, you basically might as well write your own engine if you want to create a moddable game.
And it's really interesting because Dusk, I've been following the developments of Dusk very, very closely, and it uses Unity Engine for it, and a friend, the zombie killer, he has gotten in contact with the developer about modding support, and he's written his own fork of the engine that allows for modding to be done and loaded in Unity, and that is just crazy.
That blows my mind.
Yeah. I mean, he even added a Quake-style console with cheat codes and everything, and it's like, I don't know if it's still in, or if it's still on the table, or if it was just sort of a momentary diversion or thing of interest, but it's just crazy, the sort of things that
imagine if he used these powers for good.
Speaking of games, moving on from there, let's close things out a little bit. Ed, Kaiser, what have you been playing recently?
Turok.
What have you been playing that's not related to work recently?
That's actually harder.
Well, the most recent thing I played was Strafe.
Strafe. I think
Strafe.
You mean.
Strafe. Yeah, that's it. I don't know why.
To be fair, I would have made the same mistake.
Yeah, I really wanted to give it a chance. I really want to enjoy it, but I just can't do it.
It's an interesting beast.
That's not entirely true. That's not the only game we've been playing. Me and myself and Kaiser have actually been playing Blood in co-op lately.
Oh, really? How's that game? I know nothing about Blood, this strange FPS from the 90s that nobody has ever heard of.
It's actually the first time in a long time that I've been playing Blood. Because I played it a couple of times when I was like 10, and that's all I remember. So this is the first time I've actually been playing through the campaign properly, and the first thing I've noticed is that it is ridiculously difficult.
Oh yeah.
Like, I have no idea how I would complete it in single player.
It is a completely different beast from Doom, Duke Nukem, Shadow Warrior. It is just, it's crazy.
Well, it's slightly easier in a single player since you're not constantly team-killing each other.
You've watched the stream!
I have.
Yeah, don't get me started on that.
So, is there, like, any sort of airing of grievances y'all want to do? Like, is there anything you'd like to tell each other now?
Surprisingly, no. Oddly enough, Kaiser is the one person I don't seem to care about getting killed by. I don't know if it's Blood or if it's Kaiser, but I just don't care. I was like, oh, okay, that happened.
Well, it looks like you shot me in the ass again. Oh, that little scoundrel.
It doesn't help.
Oh, another own goal.
Yeah, it actually doesn't help when the game actually auto-aims your fire towards another player.
Oh, that just means it's confused about deathmatch.
It's sort of, it's like how Doom worked. But it's much worse in Blood because you have dynamite and it basically kills players in one hit.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it just doesn't care between friend or foe, right?
Nope.
Oh, that's crazy.
Sounds like life.
Try to think of other games that I've... Ooh. What if I played other than Blood, though? I'm not sure.
Actually, another game that I've played, Edward actually gifted this to me. It was Sonic All-Stars.
That, Sonic All-Stars game. Racing Transformers.
Yeah, that's it.
Really?
The best Mario Kart game.
It's got Sanshiro in it, so that makes it great.
Yeah, I noticed that the AI in that game doesn't rubber band, so that immediately makes it like better than Mario Kart. I also remember seeing that happen in the SNES version of F-Zero, and I just hated that. way where the AI would always catch up to you no matter what. And
oh yeah, that was awful in like F-Zero GX especially.
Fun times.
All Stars Racing Transformed is one of the few games that is where my love of split screen comes from. When that game came out, I would bring that over to a university games night every once in a while, and it would just be four of us playing split screen on my laptop, and it was like the best.
Nice.
It was like sticking split screen in everything.
There's still something to be said for the comfy couch.
Now, if only I had friends to play with.
Just teach your cats.
Edward, will you be my friend? I've got the rope and everything.
Lewd.
Not on the podcast term.
Okay. How about you, Kinsey? What have you been playing recently?
If we're getting into the non-retro... Well, first off, since Kaiser mentioned Strafe, I recently played another first-person procedurally generated roguelike-y thing that I got in a Humble Bundle called Wasted.
Mm.
And it is where Strafe was trying to take its cues from retro FPS-y stuff. Wasted takes its cues straight out of Fallout 3. And there are things about it that really rub me the wrong way.
Like what?
If you stay on a floor for too long, a horrible instant kill thing spawns in the level and starts chasing you.
Oh, what?
Yeah. And the only way you can tell if it's getting close is if the music changes. So you can't really go with that Fallout vibe of checking every container, because if you do, the music will suddenly go all Jaws-like, and you'll have to start running.
It also means you can't, like, turn off the music and play your own.
Yeah, it also pops up like a little icon on the mini-map, but the music is more obvious, so.
Yeah.
A better game that I've been playing recently, in keeping with the theme of, like, remasters of retro games, is Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap.
Ooh, I saw some screenshots of that. The art style is beautiful.
Yeah, it's a remake of a Master System game, but all the artwork has been redone in like this French comics style. And all the audio has been redone, all the music's like a live band of like flutes and that sort of stuff. And it just has this really fun vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that's fun about it is that you can switch back to the original graphics and sounds with presses of a button.
Ooh. I love that shit in games. I don't know why. I just love it.
So it's sort of fun to walk into this area with this absolutely beautifully painted, grandiose background of this gigantic statue implying, like, some sort of unspoken lore or whatever, and then you press the button to switch back to the Master System graphics, and it's literally just flat blue. But there's a ton of personality in how they've done all the stuff, new art in that game. If you liked the original game, then I definitely recommend it.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to have to check it out.
Mm. I also gave Steam World Heist a go recently, and that's pretty fascinating. It's a side-scrolling turn-based strategy game.
Wait, what?
Yeah, like, you move around, and you have, like, three dudes, and you tell them where to go in this little side-scrolling platformy environment, and you take turns in that. And shooting is actually done by setting the direction that they shoot, so there's still a bit of skill involved. And you can even, like, ricochet shots off of surfaces. So some guy's hiding behind cover, and you've got, like, a laser sight or whatever, you can actually bounce shots off the ceiling and the wall behind him to hit him in the back.
Mm.
There's some cool stuff like that.
It's definitely a unique blending of genre, too. I mean, you wouldn't expect strategy stuff in the side-scroller. Usually it's top-down in some variation.
And you usually don't expect, like, player skill checks like that in a turn-based strategy game. Usually it's a strategy.
Mm-hmm. Numbers, and crunching all of those.
So yeah, it's an interesting little mixture of genres, that. I recommend it.
For me, I'm pretty simple. I mean, I've mentioned this earlier, but I've been playing Rise of the Wool Ball. It came out not too long ago, so I've only gone through the first episode, including the secret level, but it is very much an improvement over the previous in every single way. Shadow of the Woolball took a lot from Wolfenstein, and this, as mentioned before, takes a lot from Rise of the Triad, and the difference in theoretical tech level is staggering. First impressions are wonderful. The additional Z-axis stuff with bouncing mushrooms, sprite bridges, balloons, and more makes level layouts a lot of fun to go through. The original, it had this sort of Wolfenstein-y, everything is 90 degrees, flat rooms, no skyboxes, anything like that. But these are actually open levels. I mean, you're jumping up and down, you're going left and right, you're going through doors, and then you're going through corridors over the doors, and it's fun. It is really, really fun. The new enemies, also pretty neat. There's this flying cat thing that drops bombs on you, explosive barrels. And one really interesting encounter is when you're in a bouncing room filled with bouncing mushrooms, so you're just constantly going up and up and up, and the flying cat can't really drop any bombs on you, so you can just kind of kick it to death.
There's a lot of fun stuff in that mod. It's got a very lighthearted feel to it, which is sort of unique among Doom mods.
Mm-hmm. I really like how it handles some of the more advanced features, too. Like, cutscenes are done very, very simply. It's just a picture of a face and some text. But all of the voice clips are sort of this charming Banjo-Kazooie sort of gargling, so it's like it's really cool.
My favorite thing is like when you walk up to one of those screens and the villain starts talking to through it, you can actually punch the screen and break it. And the burbling sort of continues, but with bleeps scattered throughout.
Yes, and it's actually it actually lasts longer, too. Like, the transmissions, they last longer. So you can actually listen to the entire speech, and then he drops off at the end, and then you can punch the screen afterwards. So it gives you a lot of leeway to do that. It's wonderful. I've, again, only finished the first episode, but I'm really looking forward to the rest of the WoD. The first boss was very, very fun. It was simple, but it was really nice, and just the constant differences between throwing barbells and sudden sessions of the floor is literally lava. That was really, really whetting my appetite to see what the other bosses are down the line. And I really hope they can continue that sort of line of quality, because good bosses in first-person shooter games are kind of hard to stumble across.
Yeah, boss design is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in a first-person context where you don't really have any arms or legs for more advanced controls. Just sort of hopping around like a pogo stick with a gun attached.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to theoretically take into account the possibility that the player is just going to circle strafe everything.
It sounds like an excellent idea for a side-scroller. Your character is a pogo stick with a gun attached.
I'm just remembering this this painting a concept artist did a while back of what the player in a first-person game visualizes themselves as, which is, you know, this cool muscle-bound guy with a huge rifle, versus what they actually are. And it's basically a cardboard box with a peephole out and a hole with a gun pointing out.
Sounds about accurate.
You guys would probably have some thoughts about boss design and what we're dealing with Turok's creations, wouldn't you?
Kind of. I played more of the multiplayer than the single player because I had to.
Oh. So the final boss was man. Kind of fitting in a way. But with that, I think we're probably going to call it here. It has been a very, very, very interesting session. Kaiser, I cannot thank you enough for coming along. This has been a sincere honor and a sincere pleasure, and I very much enjoyed talking with you, picking your brain, listening to your philosophies, listening to your experiences. It was absolutely incredible, and thank you, thank you, thank you for coming along.
Thank you. I've had a blast of doing this.
Mm-hmm. Edward? Suck a dick.
Wow, rude.
But in all seriousness,
I didn't know you were that jealous of me.
Oh, we're all aboard the jelly train here. But seriously, though, thank you all for coming along. It was a lot of fun.
Not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's been fun being here.
Mm-hmm. And with that, I will see you all next time on the next intermission. Goodbye, ladies and gentlemen.
It's been real.